Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Landon Mayer, and he'll be answering your questions on tying guide flies and other favorites. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Landon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up so you receive our announcements and you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it right now while you're listening to the show and let other people know about the great content we're providing tonight. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and the property of the Knowledge Group Inc. doing businesses Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Landon Mayer about tying guide flies and other favorites. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Landon, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we will be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Landon's latest video, Guide Flies and Other Favorites, courtesy of Stackable Books. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be something that Landon and I talk about during the show. So you got to submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage. It's the same text box you can ask questions in during the show. So listen closely. Use your best typing skills. Take notes, pay attention, and maybe you'll be the proud owner of Landon's latest video, Guide Flies and Other Favorites. Our guest tonight is Landon Mayer. Landon's angling success is fueled by an addiction to pursuing selective quality trout on the fly. Landon has enthusiastically teaches and demonstrates his techniques on the river knowledge to anglers and has developed innovative strategies for sighting, hooking, and landing selective trout. He shares these tips and secrets in his books, 101 Trout Trips, A Guide's Secrets, Tactics and Techniques, Colorado Best Fly Fishing, Sight Fishing for Trout, The Hunt for Giant Trout, and the 25 top locations in the U.S. to catch a trophy trout, Guide Flies, in addition to instructional videos, Guide Flies, and Other Favorites, and Mastering the Short Game. Landon's passion for fly fishing has allowed him to make several noteworthy contributions to the sport on and off the water. This includes travel to fly fishing-related organizations of the Mid-Atlantic, West, Pacific Northwest, Southwest, and Southern states, as well as teaching through guided trips, fly fishing classes, presentations, and demonstrations of his unique techniques. Landon is a contributing writer for Fly Fisherman, High Country Angler magazines, and his contributions have also been featured in publications such as Fly Fusion and American Angler magazines. Landon has been guiding in Colorado full-time on the South Platte River for the last 21 years and one full season up in the Naknek River in Alaska. He resides with his wife, Michelle, and their four children in Florissant, Colorado. Landon, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you very much, Roger. It's great to be with you and everybody tonight on the show. I'm excited.
Yeah, and this is the, let's see here, One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. This is the eighth show I've done with you, Landon, for the years.
It's the few.
That's quite
it's
a few.
That's
yeah,
right.
I had to count them up here. But
that's right.
Folks, if
that's
you're,
right.
If I know you're going to enjoy tonight's show, but if you want to hear the other shows I've done with Landon, check them out. You can just go on the top line menu of our website, go to Podcast Archive, Search Archive, type in Landon Mayer, and you get a whole list of the shows we've done with them. And some great, great shows we've done over the years. Landon's
Absolutely.
Been with me from the start. We were just talking about that before the show.
That's
about
right. That's
2006,
right.
There was only two podcasts, and the Itinerant Angler and mine. You ask about fly fishing, and now there's dozens out there, but we're proud to say we're one of the first, and I'm proud to say that Landon was one of my first guests. So,
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
That's,
it's been an honor every time. Been an honor.
Yeah. The trouble is we're getting older, Landon. That's the trouble.
That's right. That's
but
right.
Wiser,
and
wiser.
The fish are getting wiser as well. The fish are getting wiser.
That's,
We're getting wiser and the fish are getting wiser.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, I know a lot of the listeners out here, or I've heard through the grapevine, so to speak, that you had a back injury recently. And how are you doing? And I'm sure everybody would like to know, you know, how are you recovering?
I appreciate that. Yes. Unfortunately, I did right after Christmas have a back injury, an accident at the gym as a malfunction of equipment, ended up injuring my L4 and L5 discs in my spine. I'm happy to announce I'm doing well. I've been able to avoid surgery to this point. I've been doing a lot of treatments, stem cell treatments, getting ready to do some more steroid treatments down the road, and just daily physical therapy. So it's great to receive so much kindness and warmth and support from the industry, and it really has helped myself and my family tremendously. So I'm on the path to recovery, enjoy doing activities such as this, looking forward to being back at the show. My goal is to be back at the Washington and Denver fly fishing shows coming up, and then ultimately full-time back on the water. So that's the goal, and that looks like the projected future. If I end up having surgery, it's something elective down the road, which is all due to the wonderful staff at UC Health and Memorial Hospital and so many great friends and clients. And again, it's the enthusiasm and love and passion of the support that everybody has been giving us. So I truly thank you and happy to announce that on the road to recovery. So this is great.
That's great. Well, that's really good to hear, Landon. And I'm happy to hear that things are looking up. Yeah, as we've discussed, back problems are, you know, one of the worst, because whatever, you know, whichever way you turn, it hurts, right? You know, so
it does. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fundamental to our movement and so forth. And folks, we did, one of Landon's kind friends set up a GoFundMe page for Landon, medical expenses and stuff. So we did put a link on there on right under the description of the show tonight. So if you'd like to help Landon out, because that would be great, because Landon's given so much back to the fly fishing industry in the way of his books, in the way of his seminars and his demonstrations at the fly fishing shows, and all the club presentations he's done. So if you feel like you could help him and give back to him, I'm sure he'd appreciate it, and so would I. So good luck with that recovery, Landon.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate that. You bet.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this on any of the shows. I was trying to think back, but I didn't have time to go back and listen. But how did you get started in fly fishing? Because this has pretty much been your whole life, right?
It has, yeah. That's a great question. I actually was introduced to fly fishing from family and friends at a young age. I first started picking up the fly rod and pursuing fish in 11 Mile Canyon. I was about 7 or 8 years old and truly loved it. Fell in love with not only the sport, but just the thought of the adventure going out to these beautiful locations on the South Platte River. And since then, I learned how to tie flies from Gary Alameda when I was 13 years old at the Angler's Covey, which everybody in the class celebrated with the beer. I celebrated with the soda. So I remember that clearly. It was a great class. And then from there, I was able to start guiding and working with the Broadmoor Hotel when I was 18 years old in 1997. And then I also started shortly after that with the Peak Fly Shop. So it's been an amazing journey, and all of my adult life has been exposed to giving back on the water, meeting so many great people, so many great anglers and fly tiers, and was very fortunate in, you know, speaking of this project with the video and the fly tying book, to have the exposure and learn how to tie flies. I remember in the class specifically with Gary, We were spinning deer hair, we were tying posts on dry flies, and we were wax the thread for dubbing. So kind of old school techniques, but they were great learning that and being able to evolve into the synthetic side of it too. So it's been a great journey from a kiddo till now, man. Never lost the passion, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, that's great. Now, so you said you started out guiding for the Broadmoor, and then for the, was it Angler's Covey that you started?
The Peak Fly Shop. So yeah,
Peak Fly Shop. Okay, the other one.
So learned how to tie at the Covey and guided with the Peak, and the company at the Broadmoor at the time was Colorado Fishing Adventures, and Gary Wilmart actually owned that lodge, and he owned a second lodge on the San Juan River, Rainbow Lodge. So I remember starting on the South Platte River and literally graduating high school, and that summer started doing trips with Dusty Sprague and Tony Gibson. So it was a dream come true.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's how you got your first clients. That's right. And then when did you spin off on your own and do your own thing?
Yeah, great question. So after about 10 years, my 11th season, I decided to get my own permits and start doing trips with my own identity, land and mare fly fishing, and follow the path of hunting gator browns. And it was really nice because while setting my own standard and setting off on my own adventure as an outfitter independently, being that I'm able to work with the whole community of fly shops and anglers abroad, it's been a wonderful experience. I think it's a proud flag that Colorado has where many anglers or many professionals in this industry all work together, even on the same river systems, and we're able to share clients, share the passion, share the love, and it's been really wonderful. So since then, I've been to this point full-time, 27 years guiding and 1 year in Alaska. So it's been an amazing independent journey, too.
Wow. Yeah, it sure has. So recently you released Fly Tire's Masterclass video on tying guide flies, and it's titled Guide Flies and Other Favorites. Can you tell us a bit about it and how it came to be?
You bet. Yeah, that's a great question. It's one of my favorite projects and honestly one of the most challenging. A good friend of mine, Jay Nichols, the acquisition editor for Stackpool Books, he owns his own publishing house too, Headwater Books, and this was shot with Headwater Media Group. And I remember flying out to Pennsylvania and shooting the video with Jay in the fall season, and took about 4 days total with the whole filming process, and the build-up to that point was just years in the making. But one of the challenges that people don't realize is when you have multiple camera angles and you're tying from a tire's perspective, you have a camera in front of your chest. And then while you're leaning over the camera with your arms, you're tying the fly. And it's just like casting where your front loops typically are tight, but you can't see your back loop. So the back loop sometimes is a little bit more open. It's similar in tying where the wraps away from your body are not the same wraps you see in front of you. So it's really, you have to be precise with every wrap. You have to make sure even if a small fiber, anything in the air lands on the fly, because it's a macro shot, boom, you got to start the whole thing over. So it's a painstaking, it's a love-hate relationship. You hate sometimes when that happens. You love the final project. But it really was great, and Jay was kind enough to offer the support and opportunity. We did Guy Flies in 2021 and came out 2022. And then following that, we just came out with the Masterclass video series. And it includes every fly that I have, every signature pattern with Umpqua Feather Merchant. So it has all the different flies, the different makes and designs, color. It's just all the information you can think of from make, design, and even how to fish the flies.
Yeah, great. Well, and we're going to talk about several of those flies tonight. And
you bet.
You can give us a little inside peek at what people will be seeing in those videos and in your book.
Absolutely.
We did do a show around your book when that came out a few years ago.
Thank you for that.
Good.
You bet.
So what are the elements of a guide fly?
That's a great question. This is probably the most important. Well, I will say it's the most important things that I really think about in design, but also quality. First thing is you want your fly to be realistic. You want your fly to match and look like the natural. Then you want your fly to be versatile. You want it to have opportunities to match not just one hatch or food supply, but multiple food supplies, and versatile using it with multiple disciplines. And the third thing is you want durability. And durability meaning it's going to test the stand of going against bad elements, test the wear and tear, and most importantly, test the ferocious mouth of these giant trout. So anytime you have those three elements and the three menus there to make the recipe, it really does offer you opportunities for quality flies. And it takes a while. You know, I think most of my flies have either 3 to 5 years in the box before they're even submitted or picked up by Umpqua. And they're designed specifically for success during guide trips. And I learned that from my mentor, John Barr, who every fly he designs is for a purpose, and he only fishes a majority of the time his design. So that's really where those flies and the three key elements come from.
Now, talking about confidence, John Barr. Kevin Howell in Chicago wrote, this is kind of a general question, but what size flies do you typically tie and fish?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think it's common for many anglers to think that in Western waters we fish a majority of smaller flies, which can be the case. But in really dealing with different fly sizes, you know, it's, I think, a great example, because we're in the midge season, is that many anglers, when they think about a midge, for example, to answer the question, I tie a lot of flies that can be larger size for nymphs, would be 16s, 14s, all the way down to size 24. And I think the average bass that we deal with on the South Platte River, for example, can be anywhere from size 18 down to size 22, with some above and even some maybe below. But when dealing with size of flies, many anglers believe midges are small. They think, you know, size 18, 20, 22, and if you're a fan of the San Juan, you can go all the way down to size 26. It can actually be reversed, though. Many of the midges I encounter on the South Platte, especially in the middle of winter, can be rather large. Some of these are all the way up to size 18. The other thing in way to think of this or to view this is that if you have a migratory fishery, the trout that swim up from the still waters, the reservoirs of their lakes, they're used to eating larger chironomids. So when they enter the river system and they're there during the winter and spring, they're not going to shy away if they see a large chironomid drifting downstream size 16, which gives the angler an advantage because you have a larger hook gap and you can keep a better connection with the fish. But I would say, generally speaking, for the South Platte, for nymphs and dries, 18s down to 22s, some above, some below. And the average size for streamers, typically around 2 to 3 inches. And I would say, if you keep that as a basis, a lot of the fish are eating bait fish and crayfish about that size.
Okay, great. Jason in Kentucky wrote in, he says, do you prefer to tie flies for a specific location or general flies that can be used at multiple places?
That's a great question. I would probably say most of the flies I designed were designed in thoughts of all the locations I've fished, but they really do hold well on the South Platte or the home waters. But what I found, for example, my leeches, they're worldwide. Fly, if I were to, just like Jack Dennis does with the one fly tournaments back in the day, if I were to have one fly to fish anywhere in the world for any trout situation and even other species situations, it would literally be a leech. And if I could have the adjustment with two flies, it would be a weighted mini leech jig and an unweighted Mares mini leech. So I do believe that they're world renowned, and flies that can work all over the fisheries, anywhere that you were locating larger quality trout.
Yeah, well, that kind of, I know your leech pattern has been super successful. Well, we're going to talk about that later. I'll leave that for later. But, you know, the old Woolybugger has been a favorite for ever since I was a kid. It was one of the first flies that I tied, and that was a leech pattern, you know, different than yours, but...
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. But that's so kind of makes sense from what you just said. Matt in Pennsylvania, he says, in a typical day of fishing, how many different fly patterns do you fish? I know I carry a few hundred between the couple of boxes in my vest, but typically won't make more than 3 to 4 fly changes. I find better results in changes to my weight, casting and mending, and targeting areas versus fly patterns. Do you make more or less changes when you're guiding versus fishing on your own?
Well said. Well said. That's 100% what he's describing is truth. I think it's common, and I would say that for most of my anglers when they show up, many anglers that are passionate about this sport, it's like gear. We collect flies over the years and sometimes bags of boxes just chock full of flies. And I used to carry quite a few flies just to go through them, especially in the process of designing my own flies. But I carry and have a core selection of 13 flies, and I share those in the Guide Flies books and my other books as far as sight fishing for trout. And the reason I have that core selection is they fit the criteria. They fit the realistic, versatile, and durable, and they have all three of those. So going through those flies, number one, I have confidence, so I feel that I fish them better. They're versatile for all situations and waters. And then it doesn't confuse you, and it forces you, as you mentioned, to make adjustments to your rig. And it does hold true where presentation is more important than fly selection. A majority of the time, I've actually, in over the last 5 to 10 years, started to drift back from that, where I think some flies can be so effective that they can be equally as important as presentation. But adapting and adjusting your depth, the water the fish is holding in, the depth the trout is feeding, 100% is true. So I would say I carry about a core 13 flies, and I'll change. In a tough day, I could go through 8 to 10 bugs. On a really good day, I could go through only 3 to 4. But that's, generally speaking, that's my core baker's dozen.
And in answer to his question, do you make more or less changes when you're guiding versus fishing on your own?
You bet. In guiding, I definitely make more changes, because oftentimes I'm moving and hitting different water in different scenarios. And also sometimes the anglers, whether they're new to the sport or they have a lot of experience, some anglers can't always make the cast when they first start out. So guiding, I'll definitely change more flies than I would if I was fishing on my own. The other thing that happens too is I'm mapping out the trip. So when I go fish on my own in preparation, I'm thinking about where I'm fishing the very next day. Sometimes with clients, you make adjustments based on their capabilities of fishing, their opportunities, and how much they can travel. So you may be fishing different water next day versus the water you know you're going to fish on your own. So that's going to be more challenging and more changes there for sure.
Okay. Jason, again, in Kentucky, he says, when tying flies, do you prep in any way tie each fly from start to finish? Not quite sure.
Yeah, so probably prepping materials is
what
it's probably talking about.
Yeah, that's what I think he's after
there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do. I think it's important. I learned that from Charlie Craven and also from John Barr as well. I think preparation in regards to materials, it does a couple things for you. It allows you to tie as a conventional tire, but also looking at details. So if you production tie and you have everything laid out, you're faster on the vise. I also think it helps you gauge how much material and gives you a better opportunity to manage the fly itself, the make of the fly, how thick it is, how thin it needs to be in certain spots. So it helps you with diameter control in your flies. And then it also gives you a chance to think through each one of the materials. So you may start prepping your dubbing and realize, you know, instead of flash, I'm going to use a more subtle dull dubbing, and you can mix it up that way too. So it forces you to think a little bit more, allows you more speed and accuracy when you're tying, and gives you a chance to have a little bit better portion control as well.
Okay. DB in Bozeman, Montana asks, what is your opinion regarding tying flies using lead materials rather than non-toxic materials?
I think most of the time now I'm fishing quite a few non-toxic, and, you know, lead materials can be damaging to the resource, and I think a lot of companies are steering away from that. In regards to weight control, lead's obviously heavier sometimes than, say, your plastic or brass beads, but I'd say a majority of the time I'm fishing brass, and then I will switch that up for tungsten as well, but it's definitely less now than it was before just because there's so many different materials available.
Okay. Time to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the flies that's in your book and in the video, the tube mints.
Right.
So hang tight, everybody, and we'll be right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or you can call them at 866-845-9284. Again, theuglybugflyshop.com, or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Landon Mayer about tying guide flies and other favorites. If you'd like to ask Landon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. So, Landon, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? I know the launch of your recent video has been a big thing for you, but mm-hmm. what else? I mean, you said you are going to try to make it to some shows, right? But
absolutely.
Even
yes.
with your back situation. Okay.
Yep. Definitely going to do some training, you know, seated position, standing, walking, waiting, all of those things come into play. So definitely working towards those and starting out with Washington and Denver and California. Exciting trips coming up. I'm also scheduled to do a hosted trip with some good friends of mine, including Fred Miller, and that's coming up in March. So we're going to be chasing Golden Dorado. So I'm definitely working towards recovery to that, and also have quite a few different plans for guide trips this year. Have a great schedule set up with a bunch of clients in the works of doing articles with Fly Fisherman Magazine, High Country Angler Magazine, and we have some video production with Scientific Anglers and Winston Fly Rods coming up as well. So some exciting news there. My daughter is graduating college this year, so definitely excited
Oh, wow.
About that. So, yep, it's another great accomplishment. And my son is officially a freshman and a high schooler, so that's an accomplishment and a scary proposition, too. So he'll be driving soon.
So, yeah.
Some exciting,
that's
some
always
exciting
a
things
scary
coming up.
Time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But,
okay.
Yeah, definitely
Sounds
excited and thankful. Yeah, it's going to be a fun year, so looking forward to it.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, look, it sounds exciting. Okay, well, let's talk about one of your patterns called the tube midge.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired you to create this fly?
That's an awesome question. I'm so glad you started with that one in regards to the ties and design of the flies. So this was the very first fly I designed. And it sounds cliche, but literally what happened is I was out on a guided trip and we were doing seining. It was kind of a guided trip slash school lesson after we did some in-class seminars the week before. And when we were seining the water, we had a bunch of midge larvae and pupa in our hands. And what I realized quickly is as we took out imitations to match the natural in front of the clients and the students in our hands, so many of the flies in my box were tied with thread and wire. It does show segmentation, but a lot of these midges looked like they were encased in something clear. And I thought, man, there's got to be a better way. And I think a lot of us as anglers know when we get home, we think about the fish we landed, the fish we lost. We think about what we can do to be a better angler. Sometimes it leaves you spending that night. So that evening was up about 12 midnight, decided to go to the lab, which is what I deem my fly tying area, and design a new fly. So it took hours, but I came up with the idea of, you know, why not, instead of there being thread on the body, make the body semi-transparent like the natural. So that's when I decided taking a small wire and inserting it into clear microtubing. And this was hours of trying different sizes, different materials. And after this work, I designed what's called a stick, where you have the wire through the tubing and the wire is sticking out on either side of the tubing by 2 to 3 inches. And then when you wrap two or three times on the bend of the hook and you wrap the wire and tubing forward, not only do you accomplish segmentation, it's also semi-transparent, and then it's incredibly durable. And with Loctite super glue securing the two wraps of wire at the bend, now you have a realistic, versatile, and durable tube midge. And that's literally how the tube midge was born. And that fly was designed in 2004, and I submitted that to Umpqua in 2007.
Now, why is that an important fly to have in your box?
It's important because midges are the only food supply that hatches for trout year-round. And it's also in reverse what we call the forgotten fly sometimes, where let's say you're out and you're matching the hatch in the middle of summer, and that dang fish won't eat any of your mayfly imitations. You've tried everything. You're drifting everything under the sun, even worms. The fish shies away. A lot of times a red midge can be the answer, literally the cleanup fly, because trout are used to seeing that year-round. And in addition to that, I designed it to wear as red, copper, and black. Versatility with that fly is that you can fish it multiple ways. You can tie it with a thread head. You can tie it with a gill tuft out the front. You can tie a wing coming off the shuck on the back. Or you can tie it with a bead. And that gives you weight control. It gives you hatch scenario control. And it also allows you a chance to determine if the fish wants a dark natural or a bright attracting fly. So there's so many key components and so many ways that the fly can be fished. But definitely, midges are one of the most important meals for any trout.
Can you give us a quick description of how you tie it and maybe some tips on tying it? People want to
You bet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first and foremost, you want to do this and attempt this pre-double IPA. Do not attempt this fly post-double IPA. You want to make sure you have the clearest vision possible. And the reason I say that is when you insert the wire into the microtube and you have to stab it, like you put the tippet through the eye of the hook. Once you get the tubing or the wire into the tubing, with the tubing in your left thumb and index finger, you want to twist counterclockwise. So that way you have the tubing twisting onto the wire, which makes it easier to create the stick. The other thing is when you wrap the two bends at the end or the bend of the hook, when you wrap the two wraps of wire, you want to make sure that you're applying pressure on the wire. Then when you wrap the tubing forward towards the eye, you want to loose wrap the tubing. That prevents any cutting of the tubing where a little piece sticks off the back end, and it gives you thin to thick portion control on your midge. And lastly, when you're tying this fly, I recommend tying it with a gill tuft. And the reason for that, or the emergence off the back. If you decide you don't need a gill tuft or you don't need a wing emergence, you can always cut that on the river's edge. And that's one of my favorite tips so that you have versatility. If you need to match the hatch, you can, or if it's just going to represent a larva towards the bottom or the floor of the river, you can use either one.
And you tie this in any color you want, basically, to
absolutely
whatever you
yeah.
need, right? Yeah.
Yep, that's a great question. I think there's over 13 or 14 colors of wire right now, Roger, and probably close to 20 colors of microtubing. So it can literally match any midge to your home water. Yep.
When I saw you tying this and in a video, it reminded me of years ago. I mean, this is, I don't know, maybe, let's see, maybe back in late 90s or so. But a thing that was happening back then was with microtubing and oil. And I don't know if you remember that. Or
I do remember that, yes.
You suck the oil up into the tubing, and then you tie it with, the, you know, so it has some liquid inside that. It's kind of messy business, but but that's what it reminded me of. Again, looking for that translucent, you know, look on the
absolutely.
Fly. But I can't remember who developed that. I don't remember who the tire was.
I can tell you who did. It's actually ironic you said that. So when I started guiding, second year, 1999, there was a gentleman by the name of Phil Camera. And Phil Camera lived in Woodland.
That's it.
Yep. Phil Camera lived in Woodland Park, and I guided with Phil. And for those who aren't familiar with him, look him up online on Google. He is the godfather of synthetics. He actually wrote the first book on synthetics, and he designed a fly where he slid the tubing over the hook shank, and he wrapped thread on top of it and dubbing, and he called it the heathen. So he was a big influence, and he helped me find and locate microtubing. So that's amazing and awesome that you brought that up, because the history of the sport is very important. And you and I talked before the show, I was literally raised in this industry by some of the great legends. I guided with Ed Engel and fish with John Barr, and Phil Camera introduced me to synthetics and all these great, you know, innovative anglers that have been doing it for years. But Phil, literally in the basement of his business in Woodland Park, where I live now, was cutting and packaging tubing, and now that's sold worldwide.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. I remember tying like San Juan worms with it, you know, with a liquid with the oil inside that, and it was a segmented worm.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of who that was, because it's been quite a while ago.
Absolutely. You're welcome. That's great.
It sounds like the tube midge is something you could really fish all year round and really around the globe, right?
Absolutely, yes, worldwide, year-round. And it's important, you know, thinking outside of the box, meaning thinking outside of the box you have in front of your eyes and you're holding in your hand. Just be creative. And knowing that there's confidence that the fish are very familiar with that food supply, midges become very effective during the right season when they hatch. And again, forgotten about by many, but don't forget the power of the midge even in the middle of summer.
Okay. Do you fish any other midge patterns?
Oh, absolutely. I fish, my two favorite are actually the tube midge, and then my other favorite is Pat Dorsey's Flashback Black Beauty with a mercury bead. Say that three times real fast.
Yeah.
He's, yes, Flashback. Long name, but
yeah.
Yep, Black Beauty with a mercury bead.
Yeah, I like those mercury beads. Yeah.
Oh, they're great. They're great. And yeah, I mean, Pat definitely hit the home run with that design. And the reason I like them both is that the tube midge with a tuft allows it to show the emergence or the pupating stage of the midge. And the other thing that's great about the mercury bead on Pat's midge, the Black Beauty, is that it represents the emergence, the gas bubble on the insect as it's ascending to the surface. So you're matching multiple stages of the hatch, and again, black and bright colors. So those are two combos I leave together and oftentimes fish during the winter season.
Jim Wright in Thornton, Colorado wrote in and says, what is your go-to pattern when fish are on the very small size 24 no-see-em midges?
No, I like that, the no-see-em midges, yeah. And that's becoming part of my life now. Being able to see some of the small stuff gets straining. So I, believe it or not, my go-to in regards to what I match a midge up with, I start out with two midges, black and red. And as I mentioned, the two, the Flashback Black Beauty mercury bead and the red tube midge. The other thing I do every single day I fish in the winter months is I add a leech. So I fish my Mare's mini leech unweighted. And the reason for that is both food supplies are found year-round. The other thing that happens oftentimes with very large aggressive fish is that they're predatory and you can attract them. So if I attract a fish to look at my leech, even if they don't take the leech, they see that trailing midge, and that can be enough to excite them and entice them to take the trailing fly. So that's another fly that I use in sequence with midges almost exclusively year-round, but also during the cold season, you're fishing those really small, small midges.
A thought just came to mind with the tube midge. Is there a size limit that you have because of the size of the tubing? In other words, how small can you go with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, time flies yesterday for the box and for the winter months. You can go down to a size 26. And I'll be honest, all the way down. You can go really small. And some of the hooks, my favorite hook is a 2488, and for the bigger midges, a 2488H. And I also like the SE5 from Lightning Strike with an offset hook point for just model numbers and size numbers. But it's impressive if you can keep a fish on with something smaller than a size 26. But in all honesty, I don't like to fish small midges less than a 24. And the reason for that is because I think having a larger hook gap plays a big part in success in landing fish. So instead, what you can do is you can tie a size 26 or a size 24 on a hook that's one size larger. So that way you still have a small fly, but you have a larger hook gap to improve your hookup ratio. So that helps tremendously.
Okay, great. Time to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Landon about the Trident tube midge. So a little variation here.
All right.
So
that's
hang
right.
Tight.
Big brother.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft hackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead, trout, or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit pureskagit.com. Again, that's pureskagit.com. or call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Landon Mayer about tying guide flies. If you'd like to ask Landon a question, go to our homepage, fill out that form, and send it on over. We'll see if we can't get the questions answered. And let's just see here what we got coming in here to Landon before we get started. Okay.
You bet.
All right. Okay. Nothing yet. We must be keeping them busy with our information.
That's right.
Let's talk about the Trident tube fly. What makes this fly different than other stillwater midge patterns? Because this is a stillwater pattern from what I've
read.
It is. Yeah.
Absolutely. You bet. Yes. And great question. So what separates this fly, first off, it starts with some of the stillwater legends and people I'm friends with and look up to and admire their patterns over the year. Denny Rickards, great books on stillwaters, great man, met him at the shows many years ago and learned quite a bit from his techniques. Brian Chan and his designs with chronomids was innovative and still is so productive on the water. And Phil Rowley, great individual, awesome stillwater angler. And I remember just looking through the boxes and going through flies over the years, a lot of the chronomids, ice cream cones and such, like what Brian would tie and other anglers, they consisted of a white bead segmentation on the thread or epoxy body, and they were effective, or just straight thread and wire. But I was trying to come up with something different, not just to tie a different fly, but a different way of attracting fish. And I decided tying this fly, which is the Trident tube midge, I needed something that was attracting, something that had a slim profile and matched the color sequences of the chronomids, whether it was bloodworms down on the bottom deep or it was the emergence all the way towards the surface where they're filled with gas and they're bright and shiny. I wanted to match the natural insect. And I came with using a black tungsten bead instead of a white bead. And then behind this was a white ostrich collar. And I love ostrich in addition to my leeches, but tying it on other flies because the ostrich stands up tall and it holds its form and its value below the water surface. It also breathes, it pulsates, undulates, and is a great attractant for a lot of cruising fish. And then the tube midge style body on the Trident tube midge, you can match different colors and you can also use two different sticks where we have two colors of wire and two pieces of microtubing wrapped at the same time. So you get segmentation with different color combos. And then last but not least, we have the flash behind the ostrich collar, which is one wrap of tinsel. And the Trident tube midge, which is new this year with Umpqua Feather Merchants, I put a little drop of hot orange loon epoxy on the bottom half of the fly. And that represents the wing bud for the emerging chronomids that are sending towards the water surface. So it really does have so many different things that are key components, from attracting with color, depth control with tungsten, and then in addition to that, that ostrich collar, which is breathing and really getting those fish that are cruising by to pay attention to the fly.
What sizes do you tie this in?
Yeah, great question. So I tie them in sizes all the way up to 12 and 10s, all the way down to 18. And that really varies on the fishery, not so much the size itself. I'll typically fish a 16 as a go-to size, and that's kind of the medium. It's not too big, it's not too small. A good example of that is the biggest fish I've seen landed myself at Pyramid Lake, 25-pound male, and the 25-pound male was caught in a size 16 midge. And then I've used larger midges in South America, and we're landing fish on size 10 and size 12. So it really can just differs so much on the fishery that you're at, but you have multiple different sizes and colorations to fool the fish.
Any helpful tips one should know about tying this fly?
Yes. A great tip, and this is what I struggled with in the past. So with Umpqua Feather Merchants, who my flies are designed with as a signature tire, Umpqua's a wonderful company. We really are a big family. They have some of the best designers, if not all the best designers I can think of in the world, applying for their brand. And in addition to that, they have some hooks available from Tiempco and some of their own makes. And on the Trident tube midge, In the past, I would tie it on a 200R. They've come out with a couple new hooks that are very strong. One of them is the 201R, so it's the 201R, which is their brand new 2X long hook shank. And then the 2302, which is a 2X long hook shank with a down eye. And it's important when you tie this, you want it on a 2X long shank, but it needs to be strong because you have the distance from the bend to the eye. You don't want the fly to straighten out whenever you hook the fish. And the other suggestion is I have, you can either fish red or green if you have matching the hatch scenarios during the chironomid hatch where the food supply is hovering off the bottom or the mud flats deep, 15, 20 feet of water. And then if you're trying to match the ascending or lifting bugs towards the surface, the bodies fill up with gas, you want a brighter fly like silver and black or copper and red, and that imitates and represents the shiny midges. And the trout will understand when they're at certain depths what the fly looks like, whether it's dark and dull or it's shiny and bright. So it's important to be able to match both.
Very good. And how do you have a particular rigging you set up for fishing this fly? Can you describe that?
Yes, I do. So when I'm rigging this, I like my anchor fly to be a mini leech jig, and that's a heavily weighted leech on the bottom. And then above that, I'll run, if I do three flies, I'll run my first trailing fly above off of a tag. So it's trailing off of a tag, and it's my middle fly. And then on top of that, my top fly, I'm going to go eye to eye where I have that sticking out to the side, and that's also a midge. So it's typically two midges with the mini leech jig on the bottom. And if I'm fishing just two trident midges, I'll have one connected off of a tag and then one connecting as a dropper. And it's important if you're not doing an eye-to-eye connection, I encourage anglers when they're fishing off of a tag or they're fishing a chironomid as an anchor fly to tie it on a loop knot, a non-slip mono loop knot. And the reason for that is chironomids oftentimes when they're moving about the water, they're in a horizontal position, not just always vertical. So it's important with your fly swaying back and forth that the trout have a view of a vertical and horizontal food supply.
Okay. Is there a best time of year to fish this fly?
Yeah, good question. They're really, I would say for the stillwater bite, it's the most effective during chironomids in the spring, but can also be effective throughout the course of the year. And the same can be said for the migratory presence in spring and fall for the river setting. So if you have migratory fish in the spring and the fall come into a river from a stillwater, the chironomids work well as an imitation the fish are used to seeing in the stillwater setting. If you're fishing stillwaters, you can use it year-round, but it's extremely effective during the spring months, starting as early as March or April, going all the way into late May, early June. That's when a lot of these fish really do target those flies.
Okay, great. Well, you've mentioned this many times here so far. Mayer's Mini Leech. We need to talk about that one. So what inspired you to create this fly?
So the leech was my confidence fly. And this is the most important fly I've ever designed for the reason of trying to find something that I had confidence in and knew that it was going to work for me every day. I cannot tell you after my 10th year, it becomes frustrating where sometimes you have an attracting fly like a worm, an egg, a scud, and they work seasonally. You know, if there's scuds coming out at a high flush, they're incredibly effective. If there's eggs, you know, pre or post spawn, they're effective. If there's worms and crane flies seeping in from the river's edge during the storms, that's all seasonal, but it's also timing based. I thought, man, there has to be a better food supply or a better way to trigger fish to eat. And that's when I realized by seeing them so many times in the water moving about that it's a leech. A leech is a non-escaping food supply. It cannot see the trout. And the trout know this because it's more bang for their buck. They're willing to expend energy to chase the leech and consume that food supply. The other thing that's great about leeches is they're found year-round. They're also found in multiple water conditions, high water, low water, dirty, clear water, and they can imitate leeches, imitate bait fish, imitate crayfish, imitate swimming nymphs. Literally, sky's the limit And it is the only fly that I've found that trout do not become conditioned to. You're not matching the hatch per se. You're giving the fish the opportunity to gain a food supply that in times can be the equivalent of 30, 40, maybe even 50 insects if they get a very large leech. So it's my go-to. It's brought me confidence. And it's changed not only the way that I tie flies, it has changed the way that I fish. When I say that, I literally have so much confidence in this fly. It is just as important as presentation.
Wow. That's a lot of confidence.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful fly. And that's, you know, for guiding, it's just my biggest thing about guiding is I find passion and excitement when I see somebody land a fish for the first time. It reminds me of that moment. And that's why I love giving back and being able to effectively give back to anglers where they find more success and having that confidence. It really does allow you as a guide to have your A game and as an angler to have your A game every day. So, yeah, I'm thankful to have the thought of designing that fly. It really has been a home run.
Yeah, Jeff Arterburn in New Mexico wrote in, and you kind of answered this, but he took quite a bit of time to write this out, so I want to read this.
Yeah, sure.
The micro pine squirrel mini leech pattern is effective throughout a wide variety of trout waters. And my question is about the imitation features of this fly compared to two other versatile fly types, worm patterns and willibuggers.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like worms can be found everywhere, so their appeal is understandable. And willibuggers can imitate many life forms from stoneflies to small fish and crayfish. But your leech pattern has worked for me in streams where I've never seen a leech, and the black and natural gray-brown colors have been most effective in my fishing. Do you think that there are other food types represented by your leech, or is it just the attractive patterns that draw the trout's attention? So that's kind of a testimonial to what you just said.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And I love that he hits on the key point, and you did as well. 3 years ago, I wrote an article for Fly Fisherman magazine with good friend and editorial director is Ross Purnell. And Ross is a great angler and gives so many opportunities to give back into pages. It's a wonderful magazine. Subscribe if you haven't, because it's the best that it's ever been now. We wrote an article, Flies That Don't Suck. And I love the title, and it was in reference to leeches, right? And in starting that article and doing some investigative work, it's the woollybugger designed decades ago was, like you said, designed as a leech pattern. And it is very effective and has worked worldwide. But as pressure increases with angling pressure, as pressure increases with, you know, dams and constricted waterways, so many fish are not as free to eat larger flies or don't have as much pressure or have more pressure than what they did in the past. So I think that smaller flies can be more effective, and that's why some of these new designs have played such a big part. And the other thing you hit on, which is very important, and I appreciate your question and writing that out, is the key colors for the leech. I'll put them in sequence. This is how I fish them. We'll go 1 through 4. The first color I always use is brown. The most effective and versatile color for any leech compared to the natural is brown. Second to that is black. And then black's great because it folds a silhouette. It can be very effective in different light forms. Third for me is olive. And olive's wonderful because it can match a leech, a clump of vegetation. Sky's the limit on the versatility there. And then fourth is natural. And I think if you're fishing natural and brown, you're getting not only the leech imitation to match the color, but natural could represent a bait fish. It could represent a small fry of a trout, a small fry of a sucker fish. And you could be matching clumps of vegetation, crayfish, sky's the limit, but those are the two. And I think that it's the attracting nature of the fly and the size and silhouette that could represent versatility in so many different food supplies.
Now, can you clarify when you say natural?
Natural, yes. Yeah. So it's a gray-brown. It's gray-brown. So if you look at a pine squirrel in the backyard and you were to look at their skin or their hide or their fur, it's kind of that natural belly color. So it's a gray. Sometimes it's more gray. Sometimes it's more brown, but this is the natural color.
The natural color of the squirrel. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Any tips on tying this one?
I think the biggest thing with this fly is just to remember for the Mare's Mini Leech unweighted is to tie, leaving a little bit longer tag on the micro pine squirrel. And also just make sure that you have multiple colors. Just like with bass anglers changing their baits or lures, I think anglers changing their attractive leeches throughout the day to find out what the fish wants is important. And when you tie this, a mini leech jig version with a slotted tungsten bead on a 60-degree jig hook, it's important to have the skin facing away from the hook shank. The Mare's Mini Leech is tied on a curved hook, a 2488, so the skin is facing down, and you don't have to worry about it fouling. When you're tying the Mini Leech jig weighted version, it's tied on a straight shank 60-degree jig hook, so to prevent the fouling and to get more jigging motion, the skin is facing away from the hook shank, and that way it prevents and it supplies both.
Okay. Yeah, so that's another version of Mare's Mini Leech jig version. Yeah. And, you know, you've already talked a couple of times about, you know, you've incorporated the leech into other, you know, with the midges and so forth. What are the different ways you fish the mini leech?
Yeah, the mini leech, that's one of my favorite things, too, is how versatile it is. So you can fish this as a lead or trailing fly on a nymph rig. You can fish this as a lead or trailing fly on a streamer rig. You can fish this as a solo fly on a swinging steelhead rig. As you mentioned, the OPST line before in your commercial, you can have a sink tip head on that, and you can swim this to the edge of the river unweighted. You can fish this if it's weighted as a dropper below a dry fly. You can fish it solo as a single fly in the film. If there's fish rising, you're skating it through the film. There's so much versatility with this fly. It's really at your own leisure to see how creative you can be. That's how versatile the leech can be. It's really impressive, and it works for so many different disciplines.
Yeah, I used it in a pattern that was shared with me, and I think we did a show on this. I'm trying to look it up while I'm talking. But we used that squirrel for a mouse pattern, and along with some foam. And it is super effective. I mean, just draws the, you know, in a still water situation, the little lake down by me, and it's just worked wonders down there. But I think it's a squirrel is so, you know, I guess lifelike is how you describe it. But the movement
and
that
small.
Has must be, and lightweight. Yeah, it was with Richard Palatsky. You know Richard.
Yep. I do.
Yeah, so we did a show here, you guys can look it up, called Mighty Mouse to the Rescue. But the underside of this is the squirrel. So check it out. You can just go to the archive and search for Mighty Mouse, and you'll find that. Good pattern.
Great. That's great. Yes, it'll leave you eyeballing squirrels in your backyard for sure.
They run over the roof of my office here. Then down this tree, all of a sudden I hear these blah, 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 across the roof, and they're facing each other. And I'm tempted. Okay, let's see here. Top of the hour, let's do a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Purple Wing, which one of our guests had asked about. So be right back. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, to preserve and to promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. Again, that's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Landon Mayer about tying guide flies. If you'd like to ask Landon a question, go to our homepage and fill out that form, and we'll see if we can't get it answered tonight for you. Okay, follow-up question here, Landon, off the Internet. Do you dead drift the leech or add subtle movement?
Oh, great question. Yes, so I do what I call the dead swing quite a bit. So a dead swing is first half of the dead drift or the first half of the nymph drift, there's no movement to the fly. Second half of the drift, I either twitch it or swing it to provide movement. And I find that two things will happen. It'll give you an idea of what the fish want, what their behavior is like. Are they chasing? Are they lying still in feeding lanes? And also, it can give you a chance to trigger fish where they may see the fly for a while, track it, and then when they see the twitch or the swing at the end, gives them a chance to come over and take. And one of my other mentors and really close friend who's no longer with us and I miss him tremendously is Dave Whitlock. And Dave taught me in many scenarios that swinging flies with a lot of his caddis imitations can be highly effective. And I took that to heart to the point where I literally on every drift will let it swing at least 2 to 3 seconds before I pick up and recast. So it's very important to supply movement because the other thing to remember is that nothing on the surface or below is drag free. Everything has movement. So I'll do a little bit of both.
Yeah, interesting. We did get another question in on the internet, and this is from Bobby McIntyre. He had written in, I was going to address this later, but since he's talking about the leech, we'll introduce it now. He says, have you ever presented the leech with a blade attached, kind of a spoon effect to attract? Because he was asking about later on, have you tried blades like any of those with Japanese blades? He understands that they are becoming more popular.
Sure. I haven't personally tried blades. I've had others do that and send them. And I've had some success fishing other people that have sent them to me. But I could see how that could be an attractant. And if it's a small blade, adding any type of commotion to the fly could trigger a take. So I think that's really the attractant side of it. And I found that to be effective sometimes with poppers and doing that in bass scenarios, doing that with pike, doing that with salmon in Alaska. So it's that same concept where that chug and that imitation diving down, smoking, and then popping back up, all of that commotion can trigger a take. So I think some of those Japanese blades and like can do the same thing where it adds commotion and vibration below the water surface.
Okay, great. Purple Wing. This is
Yes.
not in your video, but it's in your book. And
Yes.
we had Barb in Phoenix asked about this.
Uh-huh.
What inspired you to create that fly? And maybe you could describe it to folks.
Yeah, so Purple Wing imitation that is very effective and using crystal flash. And the reason I designed that was to attract fish using an emergence. And I think the emergence of any fly is very important where, for midges especially, one thing to remember in designing any fly when you have a wing or an emergence of it, it's important to look at what size the natural's wings are. And for midges, it's impressive because like stone flies, even greater, the midge's wing will extend half again the length of their body. So they have massive wings, even though they're small creatures, huge wings. And when you're designing a fly to imitate that, that was the make of this design. And the reason for it is to add a little bit of flash to where when it's below the water surface, the sheen and shine or reflecting light is grand and greater than it would be on other imitations with the smaller tuft or an emergence off of the back. So that's really what helped inspire this fly. And it's worked in multiple scenarios, whether it be winter season, spring, or summer, because any time that there's anything emerging, fish should recognize that as what I call stuck in the shuck, where you have the emergence where it's breaking out of its shell, its shuck, or its body, becoming an adult, and the fish know that because, again, it's a non-escaping food supply.
And why the purple crystal flash?
Yeah, purple
Purple
as
is
an
more of a,
attractant.
yeah.
Yes, it's seen in the color spectrum, so it's seen more in the color spectrum below the water surface. So if it's near the surface, you can see sheen and shine from it. If it's fished deep in a run, it's still holding its color value and a little bit of flash. So that was the reason for purple.
Okay. Yeah, because looking at the pictures in the book, it's pretty much a standard midge pattern with segmentation, wire segmentation, thread body, and a bead head. So it's really just the purple wing that gives it the extra pizzazz, so to speak.
You
Barb in
bet.
Phoenix, who asked about this, she says, is the purple wing emerger an effective pattern in the summer months, or is it mostly effective in the winter and spring?
Great question. Yeah, and it's definitely effective in all seasons. I would say winter, spring is probably the most common time that the fish are seeing it. But again, it can be very effective during the summer months, as we mentioned before, as the fly that people have forgotten about, or you get so wrapped up in matching the hatch. But yes, it's definitely effective more winter, spring, and then as you move into the summer months, just use it in conjunction with another fly that could be imitating or matching the hatch.
Okay. We've got some kind of, we'll just kind of slide these questions in between our next fly. Jim Wright in Thornton, Colorado. What are your thoughts on tippet rings?
Oh, yes. So I used to fish a fair amount of tippet rings, and I've actually shied away from them, not because I don't think they're effective, but because I think that you get more out of a micro swivel. And the reason I fish micro swivels is there's more freedom of motion and movement to the fly when you have a swivel, because you have the pivoting point in the middle and two joining loops above and below, or on top and bottom, which allows you to have more freedom. And again, doesn't cause your leader or tippet to twist up. You don't have to worry as much when you're dealing with the swivel as you do sometimes on tippet rings, where there can be a sharp metal edge in production, which is left. And then I find it's important to have movement at those connecting points, because there's oftentimes movement with the drift, and most importantly, movement when you're fighting the fish. So I typically now, over using the tippet rings, I'll use the micro swivel.
Okay, so then that answers Chuck's question in California. So, Chuck, I hope that answers it. If not, write in and we'll go further with that. Okay, next fly that's up, Mini Leech Jig Damsel.
Oh, yeah.
I love the damsels. A little lake down here by my house. There's every year the
Oh, my
damsels are
goodness.
there, and I love fishing the adults too. They're lots of fun.
Yes.
But you want to, what makes this fly different than other stillwater damsel patterns? Because I think you explained it quite well in the video, so.
Yes. So the difference is, when I used to fish damsel patterns, and I love the damsel hatch too, I tell people, if you have not experienced a damsel hatch, you have not lived your fly fishing life fully. You want to make sure that at some point you experience it, because it is, as you know, it's incredible. The fish will literally chase swimming damsel nymphs up to the beach or the edge of the reservoir, like a killer whale chasing its prey over to the beach. It's amazing. And what happens is, as anglers, over the years, I would fish imitations in shallow water, and I would struggle whether it would be a weighted fly because it would snag on the weeds or the bottom. I would struggle because when I was stripping the fly, I really wasn't staying within the fish's feeding zone, where the fish is cruising by at a certain depth or a certain location. And then, in addition to that, I needed something that I thought represented the natural more. And that's why I designed the Mini Leech Jig Damsel. This was, without a doubt, the most complex creation. It took the longest. This was 5 years in the making. And I love fishing still waters as much as I do rivers. And those who spend time with me on both understand why. The fish in still waters can be massive and incredibly strong. But the way that the Mini Leech Jig is set up is it's tied on a jig hook 60 degrees. And when you're fishing a leech imitation like this as a damsel, the tungsten's hidden behind or underneath the skin. So it has a praying mantis style head. And the beauty of this is that, let's say the fish is feeding in 6 to 10 inches of water, I can drop this below a dry fly and leave it still. Then when the fish cruises into the zone, I can supply movement. It's mid-column, it's horizontal when it's tied with an improved clench knot, so it's balanced. And most importantly, it doesn't snag the bottom. And let's say you want to retrieve the fly. All you do is connect it where you have a micro swivel, tip it in front of it, and then you tie this with a loop knot, and you can strip it to where it looks like a swimming damsel. So you have the best of both worlds. You have control. And again, you're not going to always snag on fish when they're cruising shallow. And it is, man, it's really become my go-to. And my other recent tie that came out with Umpqua 2 years ago is the Mini Leech Jig Damsel below the Chubby Damsel, which is my dry fly foam pattern, where I have the Chubby Damsel adult on top, and then trailing 6 to 12 inches below that is the Mini Leech Jig Damsel. Now you've got something that almost isn't legal with how effective it is with fishing, because the fish can eat, it can eat the adult on top, You can eat the trailing damsel. You can skate both, leave it still, and it's just amazing how the fish react to both.
Yeah. And I can't believe, like, fishing an adult pattern on the surface, how even the small, these small trout come up and hit that like crazy. It's like, you know,
and
it must look like steak dinner, and they're almost too small to even inhale it, right? But
exactly.
They're going for it. They don't want to miss out.
Exactly.
Evidently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's important. That's huge. You hit on a key point. It's remember when you fish those damsels, adults, when a damsel adult is hovering in a mating ball above the surface, they're only, Roger, probably 6 inches above in these massive balls. Once they hit the water, and if their wings touch, they're so big in flight with wings, if their wings touch and get wet, they're done. They stick on the water. That's why the fish are willing to expend, because they'll come up and they go, ah, gotcha, you're not going to escape, because once they hit the water, they can't dry their wings off and they can't fly off. Yeah, very important.
Good to know. Yeah,
yep,
didn't know that. Yeah. No wonder they get so excited.
Yeah, they love it.
Okay, another one of our listeners asked about, Jim Wright and Thornton again. It was Tails Up Trico. He said, Landon, could you please tell us how you came up with the Tails Up Trico and why is it such a deadly pattern?
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much for the fly support and everybody listening in and tying these flies. It truly is something that I hold very dear. It's an honor to supply flies and designs for all of you. And I pinch myself and I think that I'm able, number one, to design a fly and follow the footsteps of mentors and legends and friends like JV, John Barr, and Dave Whitlock, and so many others. But it's the reason I designed the Tails Up Trico is because when I fish, when I'm out there guiding and fishing, I'm evaluating not only what's in front of me, but when I come home at night as well, I'm thinking, what does the trout see? What is the trout seeing? I try to analyze that. And I think other great designers do the same thing. Mike Mercer, Charlie Craven, Blaine Chocolate, so many of us that tie flies. Like, what is the fish seeing? And when we talk about dry flies on the surface, I think about when the fish is looking up and they see all these spent adults. And I would look at these adults by the millions, it seems like. And the one common theme is all of the adults, when I put a camera below the surface and I was looking up, they would drift by. I would see the silhouette, and then I would see clear wings. I wouldn't see the wings. And over the years, I realized that when people are fishing tricos, if the imitation had antennas sticking out on the sides or feathers, when the fish looks up or you look up from a camera below, it was casting the shadow because it was backlit by the sun. And that doesn't look natural. So I decided to recycle plastic bags from the hooks when I was tying flies, and I would cut them to proportions of the wings. Then if I put the hackle behind the actual wing, it forces the wing down and the tail up. That's how I came up with the name, the Tails Up Trico. So now when my fly was drifting with the naturals, it provided the same look. Legs that were the hackle behind the wing, a wing that was semi-transparent, only reflecting light, and then a silhouetted body. And that's why I think it's so deadly and why so many fish are willing to take it.
Very innovative. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Trying to fool more fish.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with the hackle behind the wings, I mean, that's not something, that's not something you see. So,
no.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Very good, Landon.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Any particular tips on tying this? Or it sounds like the wings
yes.
are something in,
yes.
that we need to pay attention to.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, for all of us who have 5 million plastic bags that we want to recycle or reuse, you can use those for wings now. And when you design the wings, I bow tie them in when I tie the wings in. And the other thing that's important is just like the midges, the trico's wings are enormous. Small bodies, huge wings, so we want to tie the wings two times longer. And then we also want to make sure that when you tie them, you can cut them afterwards to provide a cool angle or a triangular-shaped angle. So they look better with an angle where they're cut at an angle, probably 45 degrees, where it's the side of a triangle, and it looks more natural like the adults and their wings as well on the water surface.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I'm noticing that in your book. You're looking at that angle.
Yes.
So
yes,
any
nice.
Tips on fishing these?
Yeah, great question. So when you're fishing trichos, it's important to concentrate on where the fish is feeding and understand that when you're lining this fly up, fish that feed on adults heavily are very close to the water surface. So they're only seeing from the viewing lane of a trout, the ice cream cone, it's only visible to them 3 to 6 inches side to side. So it's very important that when you're fishing this fly, I like to fish them two flies at once. The other thing that's important is because it's spent, wings to the side, and it's dead, it's swimming, or it's not swimming, it's swinging and swaying on the water surface. So if you look at the natural food supplies on the water surface, they kind of twist. So when I tie this onto my rig and I'm fishing it, I'm using a loop knot so that it's twisting and moving naturally with the surface of the water instead of fighting it if you tie it with a clench knot. So that's very important when you're fishing the fly. And just to give it an opportunity to drag drift, drag free drift, you want to give it movement as well, because a lot of times when they're dead on the surface, mayflies can move in the riffles or move with the swaying currents as well.
Couple of last questions, and we'll call it a night here. Jeffrey Shaney in Denver, Colorado, says, what is your most tied fly, and is it the most effective fly in the varied waters and conditions we face in fly fishing?
That's a great question. My most tied fly is, without question, the mini leech. And I do
Okay.
believe now that leeches are the bold statement here, but the most important imitation that we can fish, generally speaking, for nymphs. And I think more and more people are coming to that conclusion themselves and believing in that because it's a great attractor, it's a great imitation. And it gives us confidence when we fish on the water. So that has become my most common and favorite tie every night. A big question I also am asked that I'll just throw out there for tonight's show is, I get this all the time, how many flies, Landon, do you think you tie in the course of 1 year? And I personally, just as an example, for every guide trip I do, I guide 200 days a year, I tie at least a dozen flies the night before. Because in preparation for the trip, which I believe is key to success, by tying a dozen flies the night before, I'm already fishing in my mind before I hit the water. So that gives me an opportunity to have an advantage, an upper hand, and I'm prepared because I have more flies. And if we think about those numbers, I'm probably tying 2,500 to 3,000 flies a year. So when I say that the leech is the most common tie, that's definitely a big number.
And this may be the same answer, but Gary in Centennial, Colorado says, which fly that you designed surprised you the most on how successful it was and how popular it became and why?
Yes, that's going to be the leech. And
It is.
it was,
Okay.
well, yeah, it is 100%. And a better story to match that question, and thank you for asking that, is I say this in confidence, and I say this as support to everybody who's new in fly tying or new innovative fly tiers. My Mayer's Mini Leech was supplied to Umpqua in 2007, believe it or not, is when I came out with that fly, and it was picked up by Bruce at Umpqua. When he called me up, he said, I have a box full of awesome and shiny looking flies and realistic flies, and they were excited to have it on board. That fly did not start catching traction until 2017. So with that being
Wow.
said, it's, yeah, a lot of people don't realize that, but when you tie a fly, it could be the best looking pattern in the world. But what sells your fly is not the marketing. What sells your fly is the confidence other anglers find in your design. It's catching them fish. They have to have it in their box. It's becoming popular because the more fish you catch, the more flies you need. And that's what really is the backstory behind these flies and the reason that some of the best fly designers in the world are not tying to make it look good. They're tying to match something, match the hatch, match the waters. You try to think of how fish feed, how they're going to react to the fly, and that's a little backdrop and story about the leech, and I think a better way to answer that question.
Well, don't guides also play a role in that? I mean, every time you go to a new river and you engage a guide and you're out for the day, they always have their two or three patterns that are their go-to. And a
You
lot of
bet.
times they're patterns that you've never seen before. Because it's probably their design or their adaptation for that their particular, you know, fishery or whatever. And that's how you find out about flies, you know, in many cases. It's, oh, my guide used, you know, this or that. And they used the mini leech, and I caught five fish that day on that thing. So then it'll become part of their box, you know, the next time they go to some totally different place, maybe. But
exactly.
I think guides play a big role in what we see and are exposed
Absolutely.
To. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, guides are huge. And, you know, the difference in the industry of fly fishing now in comparison to, let's say, 5 decades ago, anglers in the past, my heroes and legends I looked up to and still do to this day, when they started fishing, I was learning from Lefties and Whitlocks and all of the legends back then that it was the angler fishing, and then they would teach us what they've learned or what they see. A lot of what we learn now is the guide who's teaching the angler, and the difference is an angler sees the water, the line, the rod, and the fish, and the fly, right? The guide sees the whole picture behind the angler. You see the angler, mm-hmm. the cast, everything about the bank, the hatch, all these different things are coming together. So the guide value is very important, and that does lead over to fly selection. And the other thing is credit to the client. I always remain a student on the water, and many of my clients have a lot of skill and success and are great tires. I encourage them to bring their flies. I encourage people and myself, I'm not opposed to them tying on their own bug. Hey, Landon, do you mind if I try this? Hey, do you mind if I try this pattern? Absolutely. So in addition to you learning from the guide, we also as guides learn from the clients, and it should always remain that student, you know, concept to become a better angler.
Yeah, and when we think about it, you know, all the great athletes, the basketball players and the football players and the ice skaters, they all have coaches. You know, or in quotes, guides, right? I mean, that's what a guide is. It's not just taking you to the fish, but to guide you in how you catch the fish. And it always helps to have somebody, you know, looking at your swing, looking at your jump, looking at your shot, looking at your cast, you know.
Yep.
And so you're never too good to not have somebody helping you out is the way that I look at it. So,
of course.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We all remember Tiger Woods, right? But how many of us can call out who his caddy was, you know? It's that concept, always a coach. And I think for us, too, as guides and sometimes with clients, we become each other's life coach, you know? Fly fishing's therapy, and fly fishing brings a lot of communication and conversation. And for the times where you aren't catching fish or the dead time on the water, you're communicating with other human beings. And, you know, we're evolving and adapting. And my biggest thing in life now is that positivity is a choice. And with my positivity towards my client, my client's positivity towards me, that's what creates that friendship and bond and relationship to hunt fish together. So it's really special.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is. Unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up. We need to close things out as much as I'd like to talk for another hour with you, but it's always the case.
We always
run out of time. Yeah, so, but hang with me here, Landon, because we're going to give away a copy of that video to some fortunate person tonight that's been paying attention. And we're also going to give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. So hang tight, everybody. I know you're going to want to take a look at Landon's latest video, Guide Flies and Other Favorites from Headwater Media. So hang tight. We'll be right back, and we'll give those prizes away. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section of tonight's show. It says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show so you don't miss a chance at winning one of these great prizes we have. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show to collect your information so we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. To learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org. Again, that's flyfishersinternational.org. And it looks like our winner for that is Jim Craig in Illinois. Jim Craig, so congratulations.
Right, congratulations.
You'll enjoy
yeah.
your membership there. And the second thing we're giving away is a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. And to learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. Again, both of these organizations are great to be a member of. If you don't win tonight, go join them anyway. Our winner for that is Bruce Whittle in Missouri. Bruce Whittle in Missouri. So congratulations, Bruce. Yeah, yeah. So now, time to give away Landon's latest video, Guide Flies and Other Favorites, courtesy of Headwater Media. And I got to clear my queue here. So you provide your, okay, somebody gave me an answer to a question I haven't even asked yet. Nice try, Carl. Nice try, Carl. boy, talking about jumping the gun, Carl. And you know what? Tell me, you fill this out on that homepage on where you ask questions during the show. That's where you answered this. What are Landon's three elements of a guide fly? Three elements of a guide fly. And Landon, we got to wait a second for them to hear the question because there's a slight delay, and then they might be good tie flyers, but maybe not the best typists, so we don't know. okay, here's the first answer I got in: realistic, versatile, and durable.
Bingo.
Is that it? Bingo.
Yep. Congratulations.
Larry Edens in Santa Fe. Larry Edens in
nice.
Santa Fe. And I think,
who came in second? Was there another person who came in?
Let's see here. Yeah, Kathy Williams in Minster, Ohio.
All right, let's do this. Let's sweeten the pot. Let's give the video to Larry, and let's give Kathy a copy of the Guide Flies book.
Oh, wow. Nice, nice. I didn't expect that.
You bet.
And yeah, perfect. So congratulations, Larry and Kathy.
You bet. Congratulations to you both. You bet. Thanks for listening
in. Yeah. And then there's more right answers coming in. Sorry, folks. Got to be a little bit quicker.
Appreciate
but,
everybody though,
very,
doing the show and answering. Yeah, you bet. Happy
yeah,
to do that.
Very kind of you, Landon.
You bet.
And, thank you so much. Oh, and by the way, Larry and Kathy, please send in your address into your shipping address into the same form that you just filled out. So I have that. I have your name and I have your email address, and include your phone number as well. I'm not sure if they'll need that for the video or not, but that always helps. So thanks for playing, and please provide that information. Landon, again, appreciate you being on the show with me. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
I'll
you
have
bet.
To do it again because I was. I think I was reading an old article talking about flats fishing for trout up there and spinning and stuff.
Yeah.
It kind of caught my
yeah.
eye. I think it was an old,
yeah.
old magazine. But I go, okay, I'm going to
yes.
have to hook up with Landon again and maybe talk about that next time. So,
let's do that.
Yeah.
I'd love to. Anytime you want to do a show, and I appreciate from the beginning, Roger, your support with all of the projects, and it means the world to me. And, you know, I'm thankful to give back. I'm thankful to everybody who makes these projects come to reality. I'm thankful to the clients and the kindness of anglers in the world that provided that positivity and support, and good friend Fred Miller with the GFM support. It's just, it really is humbling. It's a great way for me to see how many people give back and remind me how to be a better person every day and give back more every day. So it's my pleasure, and it really has been an honor to do this with you tonight.
Well, thank you. And, of course, we all appreciate how much you've given to the sport, and continue to give and continue to learn and share what you learn. So, yeah, thank you so much.
You bet.
Well,
Absolutely.
hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look on the link on the top line menu. In the archive, you'll find all of our past shows, over 415, I think, which you can search by keyword or keyword phrase. So you can search Landon Mayer, for instance, and you'll see all of his shows there. And Landon also, I just got to make a note of this, Landon name dropped like a lot of really well-known and well-accomplished fly fishers throughout the night. And I've interviewed almost all the people that he mentioned.
Absolutely.
So,
that's great.
Yeah, from John Barr to Dave Whitlock to, you know, I mean, on and on and on. So look them up by name or in the front of our homepage. We've got a list of all the people that I've interviewed. Looking for a particular person, look them up by name there. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised about what you'll find
You've
out.
You've got
there
the
and what
archive.
You'll learn.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Good job. You've done well. You've done really well.
Thanks. Our next broadcast will be on February 19th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On that show, I'll interview Matt Lucas. And our show is Drifting the Green, Expert Tips for Fly Fishing Utah's Legendary River. The Green River in Utah is called by some the most beautiful trout river in the United States. Its steep canyon walls and crystal clear water make it an incredible fly fishing experience. Matt Lucas, the owner and professional guide of Western Rivers Fly Fisher Guides, will take us down the green and give us his expert tips on fishing this legendary river. Be sure to add this upcoming show to your calendar. Right under Matt's photo on our homepage, it says Add to Calendar. Click on that button. You could add it to your favorite calendar, and you'll be all set. I'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, and Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and also Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing. Welcome.